हरि ओम तत्सत श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः। हरि ओम। बिफोर डूइंग दिस अद्वैत मकरंदः दिस टेक्स्ट ऑफ लक्ष्मी राय कवि लक्ष्मीधर कवि आई थॉट अ स्मॉल बुक कंसिस्टिंग ऑफ 5 verses known as Panchakam. It's a Kashi Panchakam. I'll first text Kashi Panchakam, then I'll do this Advaita Makaranda. So that we will not be, at least whichever text we are covering, we will complete it. This Kashi Panchakam is a text of Adi Shankaracharya. So you need some introduction to understand this Kashi Panchakam. In all cultures, the three important factors, three important aspects, one is karma. Karma literally means action, but here you take it as ritual. In all cultures, an important aspect, the factor is a ritual. Another important aspect is worship, prayer. This worship and prayer implying meditation, upasana. Worship, prayer implying upasana. Second aspect is meditation. And the third aspect is knowledge, jnanam. Karma, upasanam, jnanam. Karma, upasanam, jnanam. The three important factors which are there in all cultures. But the word jnanam in our Vedic tradition can be said to be knowledge. In other cultures, we can say it's a philosophy. Even though in all cultures, all these three factors are there, three aspects are there, they contradict. They contradict. They contradict each other. When I say they contradict each other, means what? In other cultures, they contradict each other. Whereas in Sanatana Dharma, otherwise we Hindu Dharma, between this karma, upasana, and jnanam, the knowledge, there's no contradiction. There's no contradiction. This is the big difference between all other cultures and our culture. The rituals alone are accepted, some cultures. The rituals, the meditation, the implying prayer and worship, and the philosophy. In other cultures, there's contradiction, which means the philosophers for the cultures do not accept the rituals. Or people who are religious and who are involved in rituals do not accommodate the philosophy. There's a contradiction. There's always science and religion contradictions there in other cultures. Whereas here in Vedic tradition, there's no contradiction. Why? Because In other cultures, there is no Purushartha Nischayaha. Purushartha Nischayaha means the firmness, the definiteness about the ultimate end being moksha is not very clear. I'll explain this tomorrow again, in later the afternoon classes. So, the Purushartha Nischayaha is not there. Because mokshaha, implying mokshaha meaning freedom, which implies happiness, fullness of happiness, being the ultimate goal of human life is not very clear. Therefore, moksha purushartha is not there in other cultures. For them, the highest of the goal is pray, worship, and go to heaven. Heaven is the ultimate goal. And that heaven again is non-verifiable matter for belief. So Purushartha Nischayaha is there, which means there's a vision, clear vision, spiritual vision is there. Spiritual vision means the vision of the truth is the ultimate goal. Having the vision of the truth itself is what? Discovery of happiness. So here the culture, the religious disciplines, religious culture, the worship, the prayer, all these are based on the spiritual vision. Many times I talked to you about it in many other occasions. I repeated it so many times. But in this context, I have to repeat it. People may be ethical, but they may not be, they need not be religious, they need not be spiritual. So ethical people are those who value the values, who value the life of dharma. Being born a human being, living a life of dharma is very important. Which means being ethical itself is enough. Being ethical is important. We have Bertrand Russell, Bernard Shaw, those people, philosophers. They are simply ethical. Being ethical is important for them. But they are atheists. But they are not religious. Ethical but not religious. Again, people who are religious are the people who worship, who pray. They have their own way of worship, their own form of worship. Of course, they pray. So, people who are worshipful and prayerful are religious. People who are religious, who are God-fearing, who are worshipful and prayerful, religious, need not be spiritual. They are spiritual. But spiritual people are those who are ethical, who are also religious. No choice. Spiritual people are religious, spiritual people are ethical. They have to be ethical. No choice. Why? Because the spiritual people are those who are committed to the pursuit of knowledge. It's an introduction. Spiritual people are those who are committed to the pursuit of knowledge. So being committed to the pursuit of knowledge, attainment of the knowledge of the reality is the ultimate goal, absolute end. So jnana paraha, in Sanskritam we have this word jnana paraha. Jnanam param yesham te jnana paraha. Those people for whom attainment of knowledge is the ultimate goal, absolute end. Because attainment of knowledge itself is moksha. Jnanameva moksha. Jnana deva kaivalyam. So it is made very clear in our teachings. unless and until a person has purushartha nischayaha, there's no way of understanding the importance of knowledge. A person has purushartha nischayaha, moksha becomes his ultimate goal. If moksha is the ultimate goal, then the only means of attainment of moksha is in the form of attainment of knowledge. Therefore, knowledge becomes the only means. And those who know the connection between jnanam and moksha, knowledge of the truth and discovery of happiness. Those who know the connection between jnanam and moksha in terms of sadhana sadhya sambandha. Knowing the value of jnanam, they become committed to the pursuit of jnanam. So without purushartha nischaya, without knowing moksha being the ultimate goal, there's no way of understanding the importance of knowledge, the value of knowledge. Without knowing the value of knowledge, there's no way of becoming committed to the pursuit of jnana. You will not aspire for something if you do not know the value of it. So who are the people who can be committed to the pursuit of jnana? Only those who know the value of jnana. Those who know that jnanam is the only buying power of moksha. And those who know the value of jnanam, those who become committed to the pursuit of jnanam, are the spiritual people. Spiritual people. Until and unless a person becomes committed to this pursuit of jnanam, having attainment of knowledge as the ultimate goal, that one cannot be called a spiritual person. So once as a person becomes a spiritual person, and naturally he is religious also. A spiritual person is choicelessly a religious person also. He becomes religious also. Because he seeks grace of Bhagavan. And he is worshipful, he is prayerful. Because being worshipful implies living a contributive life and being thankful, being grateful for all everything that's given. And being prayerful means the necessity for a person to seek Bhagavan's grace, to become qualified for the attainment of jnanam, even for the attainment of jnanam. Therefore, there's no choice. Spiritual person is definitely religious. But the religious person need not be spiritual. And the same spiritual person definitely also is what? Ethical. Why? Because the person who knows the value of jnanam knows the value of dharma also. Because Shastra everywhere in Bhagavad Gita, in all the Upanishads, it's always emphasized. Because attainment of having the desire for jnanam is okay. But to attain jnanam, one has to be qualified also. Only in the qualified mind jnanam can take place. We saw yesterday also, the knowledge has to rise. One must be qualified, eligible. One must have adequately pure and steady mind. That adequate mental purification, mental steadiness is possible. Managing one's emotions is possible only if a person strictly lives a life of dharma, life of values. Even living a life of dharma, as we saw, comes under the category of karma only. Living a life of dharma, living a life of values means one has to be conscious of what one is aspiring for, what one wants to do to fulfill one's desire. Whether it is right or wrong, before doing, one must have discretion in action, whether it is right or wrong. And once it is right, and he must use his will to do, if it is wrong, he must be able to refrain also. So one has to always use his knowledge of right and wrong, use his willpower to choose to do the right, to refrain from the wrong. Therefore, the person who knows the value of dharma definitely lives a life of dharma. values. It is living, strictly living a life of dharma will help a person accumulate punyam. The more and more a person accumulates only punyam, how simply living a life of values, there's a possibility of neutralizing one's inevitably, unknowingly accumulated papams. Only when the previously accumulated papams become neutralized, resolved, the obstructions in attaining the jnanam will be removed. Therefore, this living a life of dharma is important. That is how one can become emotionally stable, intellectually sharp. Even intellectual sharpness is not possible without living one's life consciously. Living a life of dharma means always being very, very alert. Alert. Being alert means one cannot be mechanical. It's called avadhana dhanam, isn't it? Paying attention to everything that you are doing. It itself is what? Becomes a sort of pre-preparation for meditation. Paying attention to what I am doing, always paying attention means being alert. And being alert means not being mechanical. Not being mechanical. This is how living a life of dharma contributes for intellectual sharpness. Buddhi tikshnata. Intellectual sharpness. Therefore, the spiritual person who is choicelessly ethical and religious is given to the pursuit of jnanam. Whereas an ethical person need not be religious, definitely not be spiritual. A religious person may be ethical, may not be ethical, need not be spiritual. So we have to understand this difference. And here, living a life of karma yoga. In Vedic tradition, all karmas have to be converted into a discipline, a preparatory discipline. All karmas, when I say, all karmas means kayikam, vachikam, manasam, karma, manasa karmani, physical, oral, mental activities. All activities, physical, oral, mental activities, whether those activities are religious activities, sacred activities, or secular, mundane activities, all activities, all actions must be converted into a spiritual discipline, a preparatory discipline. If the actions are converted into disciplines, then the action is said to be karma yoga. If it is not converted into a preparatory discipline, it is only a karma. Same actions, it can be simple mundane activities of going to work, earning money, or doing other duties, or it can be even worship, puja, doing chanting, can be religious activity, laukikam karma or vaitikam karma. Any karma is a binding karma. Because all actions of the nature of perpetuating themselves. They can perpetuate. If you do karma, definitely karma produces result. Mm-hmm. And the point the result is produced, result has to be exhausted choicelessly. And result has to be exhausted means you have to be born again. And once you are born again, you have no choice. Again, you have to do karma. This is called, is what is said to be karma having the nature of perpetuating itself. All karmas. The way all karmas, even worship, the right action, wrong action, any auspicious action, inauspicious action, any action binds. Binds means definitely it will contribute for the rebirth, punarjanma. So punarjanma praptaye karmanaha hetutvam asti. Karmanaha hetutvam asti, the karma has a status of being the cause of the rebirth. Therefore, the karma should not be a binding karma. It should become a liberating karma. Of course, karma, being a product of ignorance, cannot remove ignorance. It cannot liberate. It cannot contribute for the attainment of moksha directly. But how we can convert the binding karma into a liberating karma? The karma is converted into karma yoga, a preparatory discipline. The same karma becomes liberating karma. How we can convert the karma into any karma, into karma yoga, a preparatory discipline? Let us remember what all we learnt in Bhagavad Gita class very briefly. First of all, any action we do must be consciously done, whether it is in conformity with dharma or not. So before doing the action, one must have the discretion whether it is right or wrong. Once you understand it is right, it can be performed. If you come to know it is wrong, definitely one has to make all possible efforts to refrain from the wrong. And this discretion in action, karmani karmasu kaushalam yogaha. Do you remember this sentence? Karmasu kaushalam yogaha. Karmasu kaushalam yogaha means what? Discretion action is yoga. So with discretion, if you choose to do the right thoughtfully, consciously, if you choose to refrain from the wrong, then that action becomes what? A preparatory discipline. Because your attention is paid there. Again, even when the action is performed, the action is performed with the proper attitude as an offering to Bhagavan. Because any action is performed, a spiritual person, when he performs his actions, definitely the spiritual person is not at all attached to the results of actions. A spiritual person who is involved in performing actions definitely is not attached to the results of actions. Being attached to the results of actions is said to be karma phalanu sandhi abhisandhi. Karma phala abhisandhi. Karma phala abhisandhi. Abhisandhi means attachment. Phala abhisandhi. Phala abhisandhi. Abhisandhi. Phala abhisandhi means attachment to the results of actions. What does it mean? Attachment to the results of actions means what? Phala abhisandhi means what? Attachment to the results of actions means being dependent on the results of actions for one's happiness and security. That is emotional dependence. Being dependent on. Dependence itself is emotional. Being dependent on results of actions for one's happiness and security is attachment to results of actions. is called karma phalabhisandhi. And here the person, a spiritual person who is involved in his involved in actions, definitely is free from his attachment to the results of actions. He is free from karma phalabhisandhi. Why he is not attached? Because he is dependent on jnanam alone for his happiness and security. Because he knows Atma is the only source of happiness and security. And discovering Atma is the only means of attainment of everlasting happiness and peace. The person who is dependent on jnanam, knowledge for happiness and security, naturally is not dependent on results of actions. So the person who performs his actions without being attached to the results of actions, but he expects the results and he is prepared to accept all results with the sameness of mind. Because dependence is not there on the results of actions, so whatever results come, he accepts them with sameness of mind, knowing the fact the results are all determined by the Bhagavan in the form of natural laws. This appreciation of the results of actions being ordained by Bhagavan in the form of natural laws enables him to accept the results with the sameness of mind. Enables him to look at the results as prasadam of Bhagavan. Therefore, he is able to accept them with sameness of mind. So, samattam yoga uchyate. That's important. Just giving a brief introduction today. Samattam yoga uchyate. So, this person, a spiritual person, not only he is committed to dharma, he is conscious of living a life of values. So, he has discretion action. He has this attitude of offering all his actions to Bhagavan. He performs his actions, then attitude of offering to Bhagavan. With Ishwarpana Buddhi, he performs his actions. Which means he knows his life itself is lived ultimately for discovering the truth. And to live the life, he has to perform actions. So this life, actions are performed for living this life. Life is ultimately for discovering the truth of Bhagavan. With this understanding, when a person performs actions, all his actions become offered to Bhagavan. Well, there's Ishwararpana Buddhi in performing actions. And he also knows the results of actions are determined by the natural laws. That is why whoever has to go through whichever situation in life, definitely other people, friends or relatives, acquaintances who seem to be responsible for the results you are going through in life are only instrumental, nimittam, natu karanam. Understand? Means nimittam means what? Relation, the people, our associate, friends or family members, acquaintances, or other things also, are only instrumental in receiving the results. They're not responsible. And what is responsible for the results then? Our own unknowingly, knowingly, then previously performed actions. Therefore, the results of actions are determined by Bhagavan in the form of natural laws. Therefore, all the results are Bhagavan ordained results. Therefore, whether we know, we do not know, whether we understand, we do not understand, we accept or we do not accept, the fact is all situations we go through in life are definitely determined by Bhagavan in the form of natural laws. And the spiritual person who is committed to the pursuit of jnanam definitely understands this fact from Shastram. Thereby, he has prasada buddhi. Not only he has the Ishwarpana Buddhi in performing actions. He also has Ishwara Prasada Buddhi in receiving the results of actions in the form of the situations one goes through in life. He knows others are only instrumental, but what he has to go through in life are determined by the Bhagavan, the of natural laws. And this Prasada Buddhi, because this understanding of this fact helps him entertain the attitude of being able to accept everything which comes in life as a prasada, Prasada Buddhi. Because of this Prasada Buddhi, he is able to accept all the results, desirable and undesirable, pleasant or unpleasant, all pairs of opposite, success or failure, loss or gain, victory or defeat, honor or dishonor, whatever situations come in life, he accepts all those situations, the sameness of mind, without elation and dejection. The most difficult thing is remaining the same in all situations. Remaining balanced is the most difficult thing, and a spiritual person definitely, a person of balanced mind, person samatva buddhi, samatvam yoga uchyate. Only if a person always thoughtfully, consciously entertains the samatva buddhi, sameness of mind, balanced mind in all situations, then he is a successful spiritual person. Successful means as a spiritual person, he is progressing successfully. It is possible sometimes, you know, to be dejected, to be elated, to feel dejected, depressed. Again, one has to remind oneself, because feeling dejected and depressed, feeling low or feeling elated is not going to help us at all in any way. It is not at all good. Even when success comes, desirable situation comes, if a person feels elated, definitely it is not at all good, because it is a mental disturbance. And being dejected and depressed, feeling low also, is not at all good, is it? So without feeling elated, without feeling dejected, depressed, remaining balanced in all situations is samatvam, and a spiritual person definitely is always a person of balanced mind. He remains the same in all situations. And this samatvam is possible, samatva buddhi is possible, because of his attitude has towards all the situations, that everything which comes in life is a prasada. Acceptance of situations is there, because he is able to look at everything as prasada. He is able to look at everything as prasada because he understands the fact that every result he goes through in life, every situation he goes through in life is determined by the natural laws which are non-separate from Ishvara. Therefore, having prasada buddhi, he is able to remain balanced. So remaining balanced in all situations also helps one convert one's actions into a preparatory discipline, yoga. Having his proper attitude of doing everything as an offering to Ishvara, Ishwarpana Buddhi also helps one convert one's action into yoga. Preparatory discipline. Yoga means a preparatory discipline here. Again, commitment to dharma. The important three factors. And a person who lives his life like this, who has Ishwarpana Buddhi in doing actions, who has Prasada Buddhi in receiving situations, who remains balanced, who is committed to dharma, Such a person is the one who is capable of converting all his actions, physical, mental, oral activities into a preparatory discipline. Such a person is said to be Karma Yogi. The Karma Yogi. In fact, without Purushartha Nischaya, it is not possible at all for one to be a Karma Yogi. That's why living a life of Karma Yoga itself is a tapas. Tapas means what? One has to live one's, the way of life that I'm following. The way of life I'm following is Karma Yoga means. Then it involves a tremendous effort. How, what is my attitude I have in situations, receiving the situations I have to go through? How balanced I am in all situations? Do I allow myself to be disturbed by situations or not? When I do my actions, how I'm doing, what's the attitude I entertain? And how conscious I am of dharma values? Do I compromise with dharma in any situation? Even though always I'm conscious of living a life of values. But some occasions I'm cornered to go against dharma. Or my own pressure of some desires may make me go against dharma. So how much mastery do I have? Do I have mastery over my own thoughts? That is strictly making all possible efforts to live a life of values. It may sound very simple class. We've been hearing this for so long. From day one from Namak. In 2006, seven Mangamas class, house we started class, that same teaching I gave. Again, I'm repeating it today. But I'm seeing how serious are we. Isn't it? Because the more you are a spiritual person, the more you'll be conscious of them. You understand the teaching, assimilate the teaching, but living the teaching, dharma, isn't it? Do I live this? It's very, very important, isn't it? It's nothing new here. It's all old lessons. We've been hearing for so many years. Why I'm repeating today? It's all introduction to this. Isn't it? Kashi Panchakam. That is why the prayer itself comes into the picture. Why do we pray? Why do we pray? What is the need for us to pray? Isn't it? If I don't pray, what happens? Isn't enough? Isn't it enough if I simply live a life of dharma? If I simply live a life of dharma, I'm ethical. If I'm also prayerful, I'm religious. If I'm grateful to Bhagavan for all that I'm given, I'm worshipful. So why, what is the need for me to pray? Because I know the value of dharma. I know I should live a life of dharma. I have no choice about not living a life of dharma. I cannot compromise with dharma. There's no way of becoming adequately sharp, intellectually sharp, emotionally stable. Without this intellectual sharpness, emotional stability, there's no way of understanding the teaching and meditating upon the teaching, assimilating the teaching. It's not at all easy to shift the identity from anatma to atma. See, it's a big shift has to happen. Cognitive shift has to happen. And to shift my identity from anatma to atma means I must be really adequately, intellectually sharp, emotionally stable. For which I have no choice. I must live a life of dharma. I know the importance of dharma. I know the value of dharma. I do make efforts to live a life of dharma, knowing the value of dharma. In spite of my efforts, sometimes I'm not able to live a life of dharma. I feel helpless. Understand? I want to live a life of dharma, but I'm not able to live a life of dharma. means because I'm living in a society where I'm cornered to go against dharma. If we surviving in society is very difficult, otherwise I had to, isn't it? Then what happens? Compromise sometimes. No, I cannot compromise. I should not compromise. Which means not to compromise with dharma, I must be emotionally very strong. See, absolute emotional strength is in absolute emotional maturity. That absolute emotional maturity is possible only in jnanam. But for me to become absolutely mature and absolutely strong, I must be relatively strong. The relative strength is possible. Only if I am relatively strong without compromising with dharma, I can strictly follow a life of dharma. For which I need to tap strength, isn't it? To have the strength, I need to tap Bhagavan's grace. If I live a life of dharma, I can tap Bhagavan's grace. But to tap Bhagavan's grace, I need to live a life of dharma. That's why now, in order to tap adequate Bhagavan, abundance of Bhagavan's grace to be able to live a life of dharma, thereby to tap more, much more of Bhagavan's grace, I had to pray. Why I should pray? Because I feel helpless. Okay, I recognize my helplessness. Utter helplessness. So that's why prayer is what? Spontaneous expression of the recognition of my utter helplessness. And here, and when you desperately pray, hey Bhagavan, please bless me with all strong will and all strength to be able to live a life of dharma. Not to go against dharma. Please bless me with all strong will and strength to live a life of dharma when you pray. Is it? This is an auto-suggestion. It's a will-involved auto-suggestion. So prayer is a will-involved auto-suggestion, which is an spontaneous expression of one's recognition of utter helplessness. And prayer as an action, prayer as a will-involved auto-suggestion as an action, it does produce result. So prayer is 100% efficacious. In keeping how fervent your prayer is, so in keeping the, how fervent, so it will be effective, efficacious. So prayer is efficacious. Prayer is effective. Prayer never fails. No prayer ever fails. So understand now why prayer. That's why an ethical person definitely will be religious. Okay, to be ethical, one needs strength. And to have the strength, one needs Bhagavan's grace. And to have the grace, one needs to be prayerful. Not only is prayerful, is also worshipful. Worshipful means he acknowledges how much he or she is blessed with, given with everything that one needs to live this life. First of all, starting from good parentage, starting with good physical health, good emotional well-being, good emotional health. We are not debts. We have to understand things. We are capable of living a life in this world. And you are not starving. You have water. You have food. You have good neighborhood. Everything we are blessed with. If we think, and we are living in a world where wars are not happening, in a place where you are disturbed by wars and things, it's all Bhagavan's grace. Therefore, when you acknowledge what are all you are blessed with, and you are choicelessly, you are thankful to Bhagavan. And when you acknowledge this, how much you are blessed with everything you need for you to live, to be able to live this life. How much this Bhagavan in the form of natural phenomena contribute for your living. So you really express your gratitude through a symbolic act of offering. Offering, even when you fall flat, you do Sashtanga Namaskara or Panchanga Namaskara also, in expression of your gratitude. That's why we say worship is a symbolic act of offering through which you express your gratitude. Acknowledging the abundance of everything that you are blessed with for living this life. That is why I say a spiritual person choicelessly becomes ethical, choicelessly becomes religious. And for him, knowledge is the ultimate priority. And such a person, even though he seeks artha kama dharmas in life, of course he sees artha kamas in life, artha kamas do not become his ultimate goal. Such a person's devotion is nishkama bhaktihi. What is nishkama bhaktihi? Nishkama bhaktihi means the person whose devotion to Bhagavan has the knowledge of reality as the priority. Artha kamas are not the priority. Nishkama bhakti. That is real devotion. This is how the Shastra helps us understand this, all this karma, performance of any karma, definitely is converted into yoga. It serves as an indirect means of attainment of jnanam, moksha. Karma converted as yoga, a preparatory discipline, serves as an indirect means of attainment of moksha. Because it contributes for mental preparation in terms of mental purification and mental steadiness required for the attainment of jnana. And the jnana itself is the only means of attainment of moksha. Now, this Gita class we are going to see anyway, this karma yoga and jnana, is it? You can say, that is karma yoga and jnana yoga are the two disciplines which cannot be combined, synthesized simultaneously, but they can be, they must be followed sequentially. One has to follow the discipline of karma yoga. Following the discipline of karma yoga means living the life of karma yoga. To prepare one's mind, one has to live life of karma yoga to prepare one's mind. And one must pursue the discipline of jnana yoga for the attainment of jnanam. So karma yoga and jnana yoga are the two disciplines which should be followed sequentially. There's no choice. Should I follow karma yoga? Should I follow jnana yoga? Which discipline is important? Both are important. But which should be followed first? Which should be followed later? We should not ask such questions. Why should I not pursue jnana yoga first and then karma yoga? Such a question should not arise. Karma yoga must be followed first as a means of mental preparation. And jnana yoga must be followed for the understanding of the truth and ascertainment of the truth. These two disciplines must be followed sequentially. That is why a Vaidika's way of Vaidikaha, a person who strictly follows the Vedic way of life, is a Vaidikaha. And for any Vaidika, these two disciplines are very important. They must be followed sequentially. So living a life of karma yoga and having adequate mental purification and mental steadiness itself does not become an end. Having a mental purification, mental steadiness, by living a life of karma yoga without being given to the jnana yoga becomes incomplete. And without living a life of karma yoga, straight away being given to the discipline of jnana yoga, an attainment of jnanam is impossible. So both must be followed sequentially. This is the basic teaching of the teaching one must have as a Vedanta student. And we are validating. Now in the light of the knowledge, the light of the Shastra teaching, the light of exposure to the Shastra teaching, we are validating the prayer. We are validating the worship. We are validating living a life of Dharma. So everything becomes validated. In the same way. Now it becomes next point now. These are old lessons. Now we have cultural forms. Cultural forms. We also have other disciplines such as chanting of mantras, reciting shlokas, any different, also native language or in Sanskrit also. And worshipping different forms. There are cultural forms. So here, when you use this term devotion, bhaktihi, devotion implies living a religious life, being religious. Being devoted means being religious. Being spiritual, being religious, and being ethical. Being devoted means being spiritual, being ethical, and being religious. So real devotee is the one who is spiritual, religious, and ethical. So the real devotee can become the exalted devotee. Jignyasu bhaktaha can become a jnani bhaktaha. Because Purusharthan is there. Artha kamas do not become his ultimate goal. This real devotee is not the one who thinks of Bhagavan, worships Bhagavan only when he is in trouble. He is not artha bhaktaha. A spiritual person is not the artha bhaktaha, not arthi bhaktaha, who seeks Bhagavan's grace only for prosperity, artha kamas. No. A spiritual person who worships Bhagavan, seeks Bhagavan's grace for artha kamas, for everything, for living this life. But for him, ultimate goal is not artha kamas. Artha kamas not become his priority. Even though he needs artha kamas. Therefore, devotion, bhaktihi, includes also the principle of symbolism. Devotion includes also mythological literature, mythology. So devotion includes mythology. Devotion includes here in Vedic tradition the principle of symbolism. In fact, mythology is not a myth, is not a mere fabrication of a story. It's a revelation of the truth. So mythology, mythological literature also has its basis in the principle of symbolism. I'm coming to Kashi Panchakam, don't forget. Because Adi Shankara Bhagavatpada has sent so many texts. I've given the Advaita Makaranda. I'm giving introduction to Kashi Panchakam. So unless we understand the significance, we will not know the meaning of this symbolism. We understand the mythology. Because devotion includes principle of symbolism and mythology. And even this mythology has its base in what? In Indian tradition, mythology has its base in the principle of symbolism. So this, all these cultural forms must be understood in the light of knowledge. They must be validated by the knowledge of the truth, subject matter of the Shastra. Must be validated. If we do not understand, if we do not validate these cultural forms, symbolism, principle of symbolism, mythology, in light of the teaching, do not validate, they become what now? Mere superstitious belief. If with understanding, if we they become becomes the spirit behind the cultural forms, then you know the value of it. Why I'm doing what I'm doing. Very important. So all these factors which go with the devotion, which form part of the devotion, expression of devotion, in fact, become meaningful and useful. They serve the purpose only when they're understood in the light of the teaching, when they're validated. Otherwise, mechanically, otherwise what happens? I go to temple, I put kumkum, I put chandanam, I put basma, I do namaskaram, I get teetam, I recite shlokas, I do mantras, means I don't understand the spirit behind all these forms, cultural forms means, because there's no, I do not validate light of the teaching. It becomes what? Mere superstitious belief. It's not mere superstitious belief. They have to be understood. So, every individual's personality development, every individual has to be strong. So, the family becomes strong. Family becomes strong means community becomes strong. Society becomes strong. These are the strength of the society is dependent on the strength of every individual. And the strength, the individual strength is in understanding and validating everything in the light of everything one does in the light of the teaching, knowledge. So this Kashi Panchakam, come to the point. This Kashi Panchakam, what is it? Kashi Panchakam is a book devotion, but it has to be understood, validated book of devotion. Having a space in the principle of symbolism. Okay, now let us see what is Kashi Panchakam. As you know, Panchakam is a work consisting of 5 verses, and here Kashi, today I'm going to explore only that word Kashi today. Now we'll see later. Okay, Kashi, Kashi. When you say, what is Kashi? Kashi is the name of a place in India, one city, and it is the holiest city, holiest of all cities of holy cities in India. And Kashi is the holiest of the cities. Why it is the holiest of the cities? The very name of the place. Kashi is a name given to the place. But Kashi actually is Atma. Kashi is another word for Atma. So Kashi Yatra. Kashi Yatra means what? Very important. Kashi Yatra is a very symbolic. And people have this, you know, long lifetime desire is what? I must go to Kashi at least once in my lifetime. I must go to Kashi once in my lifetime. Going to Kashi is very important. Very important. So people all the way go to Kashi. They were, even how poorest person also somehow they make efforts. I must go to Kashi. So much of devotion. I must go to Kashi because it's been in the culture. It has been made like that. No, always people that thought has been there in every mind, knowingly or unknowingly. I must go to Kashi in my lifetime. What is Kashi Yatra? Journey towards Kashi. Is Kashi Yatra. And this city of Kashi itself symbolizes, symbolic. Look at this. That's what I'm telling you. I had to talk to you about the symbolism. The symbol of Atma. It symbolizes Atma. What is Atma? Abstract reality, absolute reality, ultimate truth, Paramparul. Is implied by the term Atma because it's all pervasive. Sarvam apnoti iti Atma, we know very well. And this reality implied by the term Atma is Kashi. And this Kashi is an adjective. Kashi, it can be, it's a pullinga shabda. Kashi is what? Please make a note. Nakarantaha pullingaha kashin shabdaha. So many people know Kashinataha. Kashinathan, Tamil, many people have this name Kashinataha. So Kashi, nakaranta pullingaha also is there. Okay, but here Kashi, ikaranta stilinga shabda also. Please make a note. Nakarantaha pullingaha kashin shabdaha. Ikarantaha stilingaha Kashi Shabdaha. बट ये काशी ये स्त्रीलिंग शब्द नॉट पुल्लिंग शब्द इज अ फेमिनिन जेंडर वर्ड नॉट अ मैस्कुलिन जेंडर वर्ड अंडरस्टैंड ओके काशी वेदर इट्स अ मैस्कुलिन जेंडर वर्ड और अ फेमिनिन जेंडर वर्ड डजंट मैटर काशी और काशिन नॉमिनेटेड इट्स काशी ओनली मीन्स काशते इति काशी काश्यते मीन्स शाइन्स काश्यते इति काशी दैट विच शाइन्स इज काशी काश्यते इति काशी नाउ ऐड द प्रीफिक्स प्रा प्रकाशते काश्यते मीन्स द शाइन्स स्वयं प्रकाशते जगत काशयति प्रकाशयति दैट विच शाइन्स एंड दैट विच इल्यूमिन्स दैट विच ब्रिंग्स द मिट वर्ल्ड टू लाइट इज व्हाट स्वयं काशते जगत काशयति इति काशी दैट विच शाइन्स एंड दैट विच ब्रिंग्स द वर्ल्ड टू लाइट दैट इल्यूमिन्स द वर्ल्ड फैब्रिक इज काशी the noun kashaha kashaha with the previous prakashaha means light so kashaha prakashaha asya asti iti kashi kashate iti kashi prakashaha kashaha asya asti iti kashi so that which is of the nature of effulgence that which is of the nature of light that which is self-effulgent, which is self-shining, is kashaha asya asti iti kashi, kashate iti kashi, this is kashi. Understand kashi. And in this place kashi, in this place of kashi, There's so many things. Kashi means Vishwanatha Swami should come to your mind. Vishalakshi should come to your mind. Kashi means Ganga should come to your mind. Ganga Snanam should come to the mind. It's all many things come. Kashi means many things come to our mind. Ganga, river Ganga. Of course, Ganga is there everywhere. But Kashi means what? Definitely Ganga also come to your mind. Once Ganga means not simply this river of water, many gods, there's so many gods. Every god should come to mind. A god should come to okay, Manikarnika god. Many gods are there. So everything associated with the city Kashi has its own religious significance, its own it has its own meaning. So Kashi stands for Atma. Understand now? That's why I said symbolism. Kashi means what? Atma. And traveling to Kashi all the way from here to Kashi means what? Kashi Yatra is what? Okay? Journey towards yourself. Journey, even journey, not real journey. As though you are traveling towards Atma. Being born in this world, being ignorant of one's own self, as innocent, naive person. And you are searching for your own Swarupam. As a spiritual person. As a spiritual person, when you begin your journey, life, the journey of life, and the journey of life should culminate in what? The attainment of jnanam. If you discover your swarupam, that is, Kashi Yatra is over. Discovering your own swarupam is what? Completion of Kashi Yatra. The journey to Kashi, isn't it? You reach Kashi, all the way travel to Kashi, you reach Kashi means what? reaching Kashi and having the darshan of Vishwanatha Swami. Vishwanatha Swami darshan is what? Completion of Kashi Yatra, which is Atmajnana Praptihi. Attainment of self-knowledge is having the vision of darshanam of Vishwanatha Swami. And who is Vishwanatha? Kashi. Atma. Atma is Kashi. Atma alone Kashate. And this abstract, formless reality, which is ever of the nature of knowing, the knower of the self, the knower of the world, is only Atma. That's why Swayam Kashate. The self-effulgent, self-shining, self-evident is Kashi. Kashi is this abstract, formless consciousness is self-effulgent reality is Kashi. Why it is called Kashi? Why this reality is implemented from Kashi? To have the knowledge of anything in the world, you need evidence. To have the knowledge of the existence of anything and everything in the world, you need evidence. You need a pramanam. You depend some pramanam or the other. Is there light? Yes, there is light. To have the knowledge of the existence of the light, you need the pramanam in the form of your seeing power. To have the knowledge of the existence of sound, you need the pramanam, evidence in the form of your hearing power. So to have the knowledge of anything and everything other than yourself, you need the pramanam. You need an evidence. Isn't it? So knowledge of the existence of anything and everything is dependent on a given evidence in the form of given means of knowledge. Whereas Kashi is said to be Kashi. This abstract formless reality Atma is said to be Kashi, Swayam Kashate, because to know the existence of this Kashi, you do not require any pramanam. That is why reality is implied by the term Kashi. Self-shining, self-effulgent, self-evident means what? Does not require any pramanam. You don't require any pramanam, any evidence to have the knowledge of your own existence. To have the knowledge of existence of the reality. The reality is in the form of your own swarupam, your own self, one's own self. Therefore, reality is said to be Kashi. This is all pervasive reality, obtaining as one's own self, the innermost essence of every individual is Kashi. And discovering this Kashi is what? As long as this Kashi is not understood, you are still far away from Kashi, and your journey continues towards the Kashi. You are traveling, going, going, going. The Kashi is not understood, arrived at. And once you understood Kashi, you have reached Kashi. This is Kashi Yatra. See? Kashi Yatra. And going all the way to Kashi, first we go to a ghat known as Manikarnika Ghat. People go to Manikarnika Ghat. And what do they do? Going to Manikarnika Ghat. What is special about Manikarnika Ghat? My God. Manikarnika Ghat is the place. It is said to be the holiest of the gods. Kashi is the holiest of the cities. And Manikarnika is the holiest of the gods. Most auspicious of the gods. Why? That is the place all dead bodies are cremated. Oh my God. It's a crematorium, isn't it? Not a crematorium. All the dead bodies are cremated only in Manikarnika Ghat. And why do we say it is a holy God? The holiest God. Because Manikarnika Ghat symbolizes what? Negation of body identity. Okay? Negation of body identity. Identity with the body should be given up, isn't it? So the bodies are cremated there. Physically, bodies are taken, cremated there. What does it mean? It symbolizes giving up the essence, shifting the essence from anatma to atma, thereby resolving, negating the identity with the body. Freeing oneself from the notion that I am the body. Is what? Sounds very simple. I'm preparing all this now. I am the body. Okay. Let make it very clear. So, Manikarnika God is said to be the holiest of the gods, most auspicious God, because it's, even though it's a place of cremation of dead bodies, now, why people go all the way? People want to live there and they tell them also, give some money and always fix deposits. Use this money once I pass away and cremate me here. Because in tradition, it has been believed that if you die, if body is cremated, they attend moksha. And go on, again, Ganga is there. Right? It is so many things. Only Manikarnika God was still there. It means one has to die to one's own body. Dying once to the one's own body means what? If you become objective towards the physical body, becoming objective towards the body means what? Shifting the identity from anatma body to, shifting the identity from the body. Then becoming objective towards the body. Isn't it? Is negation of the body identity. And Manikarnika God symbolizes the negation of body identity. Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. See. Okay. This dehatma buddhi. Dehatma buddhi, the body identity, is of three types. Okay? There are three types of body identity. How we have identity with the body? Let me make it very clear. Sometimes we say, aham dehaha. When you say aham dehaha, I am the body, is the first type of body identity. When you say I am the body means what? I am the body means that's how we have identity. When you say I am fat, I am tall, I am thin, I am sick, or I am intelligent, etc. also can say. But here initially, body implies body, mind, sense complex, isn't it? So having strong identity with the body, mind, sense complex means I am the body, that notion. This is body identity, first one type of body identity. Then, another type of body identity is what? Mama dehaha, aham dehaha, I am the body is a type of identity, body identity. Mama dehaha, my body, is also type of identity, body identity. So anything pertaining to the body is what now? I have great sense of belonging, sense of possession, possessiveness towards எனிதிங் பர்டனிங் டு த பாடி, மை பாடி, மம தேகா, தி செகண்ட் டைப் ஆஃப் பாடி ஐடென்டிட்டி. தென் மஹ்யம் அபேக்ஷதே, ஐ நீட் திஸ், திஸ் இஸ் வாண்டட் ஃபார் மீ, திஸ் இஸ் நீடட் ஃபார் மீ, திஸ் இஸ் ஃபார் மீ, தட் இஸ் ஃபார் மீ. தட்ஸ் வை சமக்கம் நோ அஹம் தேக மம தேக மஹ்யம் அபேக்ஷதே ஃபார் மீ. திஸ் இஸ் இஸ் ஹவ் த்ரீ டைப்ஸ் ஆஃப் பாடி ஐடென்டிட்டி. அண்ட் சாஸ்திரம் சேஸ் திஸ் அஹம் தேக ஃபர்ஸ்ட்லி வில் கம் லேட்டர் ஆன் மம திஸ் மஹ்யம் டஸ் கம் ஃப்ரம் ஃபர்ஸ்ட். ஓகே, மஹ்யம் ஆவசியகம். We say, no, I want this. In English we say, I want this. Tamil say, enakku venum, isn't it? This is, this wanted for me. For me, it is required. For me, that is required. For me, that is required. Means for me, for me, for me. When you say, I have to give it to me. For me, means what? Mahyam is a type of body identity which can be resolved. How? Only by living a life of karma yoga. Living a life of karma yoga enables a person to be a person of contribution. That I do here, we do things, even though we do things expecting the results for the results, but we're conscious of dharma, therefore we do anything for the welfare of not only me, also for the welfare of others. The others, see, in living a life of karma yoga, your welfare is taken care of. You're also contributing effortlessly for the welfare of the society, welfare of the world around, because you don't go against dharma. When you do not go against dharma, it's very subtle teaching. Hope you're all listening. What is same thing he's repeating? Don't think. I've repeated a lot of things, but slowly I'm making you see something differently. How living in simply by strictly following the life of karma yoga, I effortlessly become a contributor. My contribution is in conformity with, in keeping with my consumption. I'm not merely a non-contributive consumer, I'm also a contributor. How do you contribute? I contribute for the welfare of the world. How do I contribute? I contribute to the welfare, peace of the world also. How? Because I do not disturb the order. My life, the way I live my life, does not disturb the universal order. Therefore, when it do not disturb the order, I contribute for universal harmony. I live my life in tune with the order. I live my life in conformity with the order. So I contribute for universal harmony. My life is in, the way of life I follow is in harmony with the universal order. It doesn't disturb the universal order. That's why living a life of karma yoga gradually helps one neutralize this body identity in the form of mahyam. That is needed for me, this is needed for me, that gradually. Because your welfare is taken care of simultaneously, the welfare you contribute for the well-being of the society also. Not only for me, for us. That's why in all our puja, we say what? Agne Swaha Idam Namama Vayave Swaha Idam Namama. This is not for me, this for Vayu, this is not for me, this for, we say this. So na me. First now, mahyam, because what now? Na me means na mahyam means what? Not for me. In the sense, it is for the whole. When you say it is for the whole, it is for all, it is for Ishvara, it is for Bhagavan. So whatever I do it as an offering to Bhagavan, means in conformity with Dharma, means everything is done for Ishvara, not for me. Isn't it? So living life karma yoga helps you resolve this body identity in terms of mahyam avashyakam, is needed for me. Okay, then what is next? The next type of the body identity. Mama dehaha. So mama dehaha, mine, is it? That, so the upasana yogaha, following the discipline of worship, prayer, a living a meditative life. Being meditative life, living a meditative life means what? Being worshipful is being meditative. Being prayerful is being meditative. Means you do not forget Ishvara. You are worshipful means you are thoughtful of Ishvara. Your prayer, praying means thoughtful of Ishvara, isn't it? So, even though upasanam is purely a mental activity, even though the worship involves physical body, involves physical, oral, mental activities, kayikam, vachikam, manasam karma, all three karmas are involved in worship, isn't it? So, always being worshipful and prayerful. So, being religious. Understand? Being religious, being worshipful, being prayerful. As a karma yogi, as a spiritual person, as an ethical person, being religious, being prayerful, being worshipful, being thoughtful of Ishvara, helps one resolve this body identity in the form of mama dehaha. See, three disciplines Shastram prescribes. Karma, Upasanam, Jnanam. Karma, Upasanam, Jnanam are the three disciplines. Karma means rituals and also in actions. See, converting all physical, oral, mental activities into prepare to dismiss karma yoga. So living life karma yoga helps us resolve this body identity in the form of mahyam. Mahyam is what? Everything is wanted for me. And following this discipline of upasanam and being religious, is it? Helps one resolve this problem of body identity in the form of sense of possession, possessiveness as mama dehaha. Slowly, it's easy for you to resolve this body identity about my body. Then, aham dehaha. Aham dehaha. Now, I am the body. So, body identity in the form of I am the body. This problem of body identity in the empty body can be resolved by going through the discipline of Jnana Yoga. So being given to the discipline of Shravanam will help you resolve this body identity in terms of I am the body. How many of you are sleeping now? Idli and Pongal, Like you feel sleepy? To be frank, I'm very sleepy still. I'm trying to keep my eyes awake, and that's why I'm trying to speak to you. Got it? There's no fourth type of body identity. There are only these three possible forms of body identity, types of body identity. Aham Dehaha, Mama Dehaha, Mahyam Avashyakam. When you say, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want that, I want this, I want this, means what? This is because of the identity with the body. This is man, that is man. We have sense of possession, the possessiveness, okay, sensible. This we have because of the identity with the body as my body. And I am the body. That's very strong. Dehatma buddhi. And this body identity in the form of I am the body, can be resolved by going through the discipline of Jnana Yoga. So Karma Yoga, the discipline of meditation, implying worshipfulness and prayerfulness, and the discipline of Jnana Yoga. Three disciplines Vedashastram prescribes for sorting out this body identity of three types. Got it? That's what is Manikarnika got now. It is not very straight, okay? Manikarnika got simply, okay, one has to understand this, what is what validating this cultural form of taking the body and cremating there, simply taking the body and cremating a person did a whole lived life of adharma. He passed away. And pack the body, because a rich man pack the body and take it to Manikarnika Ghat and cremated. He'll become a holy person. Body identity will go? No. What it means is, we have to understand this. All the way going to Kashi and wanting to get cremated on the Manikarnika Ghat means what? Dying to one's body. Listen. Means dying means what? Dying to one's body means shifting the body identity, shifting identity from anatma body to atma, negating the body identity. The whole Manikarnika God stands for or symbolizes negation of body identity. And for which, what do we do? Three disciplines prescribed by the Shastra must be strictly followed. There's no way of resolving the body identity in the form of I want this, I want this, I want this, I want that. Cannot be resolved unless you strictly live a life discipline of Karma Yoga. You cannot overnight give up. It's not that easy. Strict understand what is living of Karma Yoga and strictly live a life of Karma Yoga. Then you started to go into Manikarnika Ghat. Your body is taken there. Imagine. And it has to be cremated there. How? Not cognitive. Cognitive cremation. Sitting here, you can send your body for cremation. Your body can be cremated in Manikarnika Ghat even when you're having the body also. Cognitively. How? Strictly living a life of Karma Yoga will help you get rid of the body identity in the form of I want this, I want that. And then I'm sincerely, seriously, intensely being prayerful to Bhagavan and being thankful to Bhagavan, being worshipful of Bhagavan, isn't it? So being prayerful and being worshipful means you never forget Bhagavan. It's being religious. Means it's being meditative. It's a Sagunopasana this. So being always being meditative of Ishvara means being worshipful, being prayerful helps you remain meditative of Bhagavan. Being meditative means what? Simplicity and closing eyes and seeing if that form and this form. That is also upasana karma. That's also upasana. I'm not saying no. That is one of the forms. See, being meditative means involving oneself in all three forms of activities. Kayikam, vachikam, manasam, karma. But your focus is on Bhagavan. Isn't it? So when you are doing a puja, you cook naivedyam, tie garlands, set the altar. Where is your mind? Bhagavan only. This is being meditative. Even though it's a kayakam karma, mind is in Bhagavan. I'm doing a puja today. Today there's a homa here. So the priest is going to come. I'm preparing the things there. Bhagavan, Bhagavan, Bhagavan. It's not nirguna, it is not nidhyasana. It's not nirguna upasana. But it is a meditation. Even though it involves a kayakam karma, the worship involves a physical activity, still the mind is in Bhagavan. That's why you're preparing the whole thing, isn't it? Right from, getting the list, preparing place, buying flowers, preparing other ingredients. It's all Bhagavad Dhyanam is there. Par Puja, Bhagavan, Bhagavan, Bhagavan. So it is being worshipful. And intensely, fervently pray to Bhagavan what you want. The need of the hour will tell you what you should pray for. Whether you want money, whether you want health, whatever you want, you pray, you seek Bhagavan's face. You need artha kamas for living the life. You need strength to live the life of dharma. Ultimately, you seek Bhagavan's gaze for mental purification, mental preparedness. You seek Bhagavan's gaze for jnanam. So you are prayerful. You are begging Bhagavan. Means what? You are not forgetting Bhagavan. Being meditative. Understand? So being worshipful, being prayerful, knowing the significance of worship, knowing the efficacy of prayer, when you are prayerful enough, as a personal purushartha nischaya, when you're prayerful and worshipful, when you're religious, you're meditative. This is upasana. This is the discipline of upasana. Following this discipline of upasana, in terms of being worshipful and prayerful, is the only means of getting rid of the body identity in terms of what? Mama deha, my body. And aham dehaha, dehatma buddhi, isn't it? So to get rid of this dehatma buddhi, dehatma buddhi, I am the body, for which the discipline to be followed is jnana yoga. That is being given to the discipline of shravanam. Repeatedly listen and listen and listen, and you will be helped to understand how to be objective towards the body. How you as a knower are different from the known body, help to understand. But Jnana Yoga is the discipline to be followed to shift the body identity, to negate the body identity in terms of I am the body. Is it clear? Three disciplines for resolving three types of body identity. And this is what is meant by being cremated in Manikarnika Ghat. If we do not understand the spirit behind what is meant by this, the symbolic aspect, it becomes what? Mere superstitious belief. If you understand it, isn't it? It uplifts a person. See, understanding the cultural spirit behind the cultural form uplifts a person. Contribute for growth of the person. If it is not understood, superstitious belief. Why can't you send local electric crematorium? Isn't it better cremation is done there? You get clean powder. There, at least we don't know, half burnt and half unburnt. So even if you cremate here in local crematorium, If your understanding is there, your body has gone to Manikarnika Ghat. And you have to go to Vishwanatha, Kashi. Kashi Natha is Vishwanatha. That is yourself. Kashi cha so natascha. One who is self-effulgent, self-shining, one who illumines the whole world, thereby is the Lord. Kashi cha so natascha Kashi Natha. Kashyaha Natahana. It is the Lord of Kashi. If you simply take the meaning, two ways of understanding this compound. Kashinataha means what? The Lord of the city of Kashi. Kashyahanataha, Kashinataha. Kashi cha aso natascha. Kashi as well as is the Lord. Swayam prakashaha, okay? Self-effulgent, self-evident, at the same time, the Lord of the universe. Is it clear now? It's a lot of, if I prepare you like this, if I teach you the verse, it will go like Rasagulla. And you can memorize the verse today itself, in the class itself. I want to finish a small text before others also join us. So they won't miss this Advaita Makaranda. Once I explain now, we can finish the teaching very quickly. You know two things of Kashi. The place Kashi symbolizes Atma. Manikarnika Ghat symbolizes negation of body identity. And body identities are three types for which you have to follow the three disciplines prescribed by the Shastra. That's the class today. I finished in two lines now. Somebody is in two lines. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.